I don't have much time left. Do you want to continue the informal discussion?
No, 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 we have to compact what you're saying.
Okay, what I'm planning to do is a little more experimental, back to linguistics, but there is a power of speech that is creative, and we have been speaking about it. It's also possible to do it. Sri Aurobindo was the great master of it. To use the power of speech to create knowledge. And it's mantra, this kind of speech. And it has divine roots. There's a whole mythology that Vladimir indicated about its divine roots. And in the 20th century, it seems to me that quite a few people have had considerable talent and put considerable amounts of energy into trying to rediscover this divine root of speech. For example, it has generally been agreed by the great traditions that this is the essence of being human. Speech, language, is the essential human nature. And so this has been reconfirmed by research in scientific areas. Heidegger spent an enormous amount of time and energy tracing the roots of Greek language and thought up to the present, and in the process discovering a way of using language to open consciousness, to carry consciousness to its limits through language. And Derrida did the same thing following Heidegger. They have gone quite beyond merely intellectual, historical, and linguistic thinking to the point of being able to use language creatively to further consciousness. And the one who did that the most and the best, the most deeply and the farthest was Sri Aurobindo. Starting from a very, very similar ground in classical, scriptural language, and finding a way to use that classical, scriptural language to develop consciousness. So we have examples in the 20th century, some very good examples of how the linguistic pursuit from the biological standpoint of human nature to the philosophical and psychological understanding of human nature, to you, the rationale is there and is very strongly developed, that language is to be used for developing consciousness. And it is a tool of the gods. It is the tool that the gods have used to create the world. So there's this incredible demonstration by Sri Aurobindo of the process in his translations of the Veda, where you can actually hear him using language to create consciousness. And it isn't necessary for it to be Sanskrit or Greek or any other particular language, because There is a point that he reaches where it's just a pure transmission through speech of consciousness. So I've been working for many, many decades on this aspect of Sri Aurobindo's work. And there is one particular mantra and commentary that is more or less the basis of everything that that Vladimir said this morning. It is about Brihaspati. It is Brihaspati. It's not about it. So I'm going to relate to you a few paragraphs of commentary and then the mantra itself. For the purpose of enabling us to visualize the power of the soul to create the worlds in us and around us. The power of the soul to create the worlds in us and around us is precisely the power of speech. It is the tool, the vehicle that is used, that has been chosen for this universe, and that has been embodied in this organic system that we are the product of through long evolution. And the linguists have discovered that as well. But it's clearly stated by Sri Aurobindo, very explicitly stated, and in a way that opens consciousness to speech at the level of the soul, not the level of the mind. Sri Aurobindo found a way to go straight to that center of power and consciousness through speech without using the mind. And almost all of his writing comes from that place. So this is a particularly poignant example. He says, Brahman in the Veda signifies ordinarily the Vedic word. Brahman in the Veda signifies ordinarily the Vedic word or mantra in its profoundest aspect, as the expression of the intuition arising out of the depths of the soul or being. It is a voice of the rhythm which has created the worlds and creates perpetually. Some of us have participated in discussions in the past, particularly in relation to Savitri, about the sacrifice of the Purusha. The sacrifice of the Purusha has been presented to us by Sri Aurobindo in various ways as the act of self-giving of the Purusha, which brings into being all the powers of manifestation. And somehow, if we are able to perform this sacrifice which is what all the Vedas are about, if we're able to totally surrender through self-offering our ego and our instruments, we arrive at that abdication of the self, which is parallel to what, to the supreme act of bringing into existence the cosmos. Brahman performs this act of sacrifice through speech and enables his other to evolve. And this is not a one-time event, it is perpetual. And so here we have another image of the nature, the perpetual nature of the act of creation. And if somehow we can attune to that, then our lives become a vibrational expression of the sacrifice that is the creation. And then we attune ourselves to all the levels of nature and existence. And then it's possible for speech to be that speech of Savitri, which is that which flows between the two poles of spirit and nature as a communication of the universe through the human instrument without any sense of the personal vehicle in between. Sri Aurobindo begins this process early in his career with a reflection on the Vedic mantra. Brahman in the Veda signifies ordinarily the Vedic word or mantra in its profoundest aspect as the expression of the intuition arising out of the depths of the soul or being. It is a voice of the rhythm which has created the worlds and creates perpetually. All world is expression or manifestation, creation by the word. Conscious being luminously manifesting its contents in itself, of itself, is the superconscient, holding its contents obscurely in itself, it is the subconscient. The higher, the self-luminous, descends into the obscure, into the night, into darkness, concealed in darkness, where all is hidden in formless being owing to fragmentation of consciousness. It arises again out of the night by the word to reconstitute in the conscient its vast unity. This vast being, this all-containing and all-formulating consciousness is Brahman. It is the soul that emerges out of the subconscious in man and rises towards the superconscious, and the word of creative power welling upward out of the soul is also Brahman. The divine, the deva, manifests itself as conscious power of the soul, creates the worlds by the word out of the waters of the subconscious. This power of the deva is Brahma. The stress in the name falling more upon the conscious soul power than upon the word which expresses it. And so behind this word, this language that we use, is soul power. And the more we are resonant with that, the more this word that we express is the expression of that. Our perseverance is a soul quality that is a sign of the intention of the soul to express itself. But at another level, the soul expresses itself with the same power that creates the worlds. The manifestation of the different world planes in the conscient human being culminates in the manifestation of the superconscient, the truth and the bliss, and this is the office of the Supreme Word, or Veda. Manifesting the truth and the bliss is the office. By office, he means the duty, the official purpose of the word or Veda. Of this supreme word, Brihaspati is the master. The stress in this name falling upon the potency of the word, rather than upon the thought of the general soul power. Brihaspati gives the word of knowledge, the rhythm of expression of the superconscient to the gods, and especially to Indra, the Lord of Mind, when they work in man as Aryan powers for the great consummation. This is the mystery that Sri Aurobindo is mediating in this passage. The mysterious relationship parallel of phenomena between the cosmic divine and the human. The correspondence between the creation of the three worlds in the human through aspiration and the creation of the three worlds in the cosmos by the divine sacrifice and speech, the speech of oblation, the speech of self-giving. And so there is this parallel between what the power is that we use to evolve our soul expression, and that power that is used in the cosmos to evolve the three worlds. Brihaspati is he who has established firmly the limits and definitions of the earth. That is to say, of the material consciousness, the existence out of which all formations are made, is an obscure, fluid, and indeterminate movement, water. The first necessity is to create a sufficiently stable formation out of this flux and running so as to form a basis for the life of the conscient. This Brihaspati does in the formation of the physical consciousness and its world by force, by a sort of mighty constraint upon the resistance of the subconscient. This great creation he effects by establishing the triple principle of mind, life, and body, always present together and involved in each other, or evolved out of each other in the world of the cosmic labor and fulfillment. The three together form the triple seat of Agni, and there he works out the gradual work of accomplishment or perfection which is the object of the sacrifice. Brihaspati forms by sound, by his cry, for the word is the cry of the soul, as it awakens to ever new perceptions and formations. On him, it is said, the ancient or pristine rishis meditated. Meditating, they became illumined in mind. Illumined, they set him in front as the god of the ecstatic tongue, Mandra Jivam. The tongue that takes joy of the intoxicating wine of Soma, of that which is the wave of sweetness, hidden in the conscious existence and out of it progressively delivered. But of whom is the question? The mantric utterance of creation is delivered of whom? Rishis meditating on the intuitions that rise up from the soul with the cry of Brihaspati in the sacred and enlightening word, holding them firmly in the thought, became illuminated in mind, open to the full inflow of the superconscient. They were thus able to bring into the front of the conscious being that activity of the soul thoughts which works usually in the background, veiled, and to make it the leading activity of their nature. As a result, Brihaspati in them became able to taste for them the bliss of existence, the wine of immortality, the supreme Ananda, the formation of the definite physical consciousness is the first step. This awakening to the Ananda by the bringing forward in mind of the intuitive soul as the leader of our conscious activities is the consummation, the condition of the consummation. It is by the powers of the word, by the rhythmic army of the soul forces, that Brihaspati brings all into expression and, dispelling all the darknesses that encompass us, makes an end of the night. These are the Brahmas of the Veda. Charged with the word, the Brahman, the mantra, it is they in the sacrifice who raise heavenward the divine rick, the stuba or stoma rick, connected with the world arka, which means light or illumination, is the word considered as a power of realization in the illuminating consciousness. Stuba is the word considered as a power which affirms and confirms in the settled rhythm of things. That which has to be expressed is realized in consciousness, affirmed, finally confirmed by the power of the word. The Brahma or Brahmana forces are the priests of the word, the creators by the divine rhythm. It is by their cry that Brihaspati breaks Vala into fragments. This self-expressive soul, Brihaspati, is the Purusha, the father of all things. It is the universal divinity. It is the bull of the herds, the master and fertilizer of all these luminous energies, evolved or involved, active in the day or obscurely working in the night of things, which constitute the becoming or world existence, bhuvanam. To the Purusha, under the name of Brihaspati, the Rishi would have us dispose in the order of a sacrifice all the materials of our being by sacrificial action in which they are given up to the All Soul as acceptable oblations offered with adoration and surrender. By the sacrifice we shall become, through the grace of this Godhead, full of heroic energy for the battle of life, rich in the offspring of the soul, masters of the felicities which are attained by divine enlightenment and right action. For the soul's energy and overcoming force are perfected in the human being. For the soul's energy and overcoming force are perfected in the human being who bears in himself and is able to bear firmly this conscious soul power brought forward as the leading agency in the nature, who arrives by it as a rapid and joyous movement of the inner activities, as did the pristine sages, compasses that harmonious bound and gallop of the steed of life within, and adores always his Godhead, giving it the first fruits of all results and enjoyments. By that energy he throws himself open and masters all that comes to him in the birth, the worlds, the planes of consciousness that open upon his perception. So the Vedic mantras are powers of the soul that express an intuition of all of the planes of consciousness and being. The soul power has the capacity, through speech, of sacrificing all of its energies in the creation of its world, its grasp of the world. Its speech opens to it its grasp of all the worlds, because that vibration is the vibration that creates all the worlds. This speech of the soul in Savitri, for example, enjoys a vast range of rhythms and tones, qualities, epic emotions, a vast unity of comprehension and perception that the mind can't generate. Sri Aurobindo managed to bring that vast unity of comprehension and expression into focus through the mantra, by the mantra. And so he says that he always would elevate his consciousness to the same highest possible resonance of being, and then channel another stream of words that express that vision. And if that stream of words didn't adequately grasp that perception, then he would raise his consciousness another time, he would perform the sacrifice again and channel again this stream of speech that is resonant with that world of vision. And therefore, the mother is able to say that Savitri alone is enough to carry us to this final supramental realization. But it is not the Savitri written on the page. It is the Savitri who is hymned just two chapters before, the Savitri who is creative speech, the divine creator Savitri. Sri Aurobindo is continually invoking in Savitri the divine creator Savitri, and through her raising the whole vibrational structure of this organic vehicle towards that consciousness in which he conceived that word. She is the mediator between that supramental realm of creative conscious energy and this threefold world of the evolving conscious energy. And so he has used that vehicle, just as they did, to facilitate an evolution. And he found the secret here. And because he found the secret here, it doesn't have to be Sanskrit. Savitri in English works exactly the same way as the Vedic mantra.
What did he say?
And so, but when the Sanskrit scholar discovers that inspirational soul force which carries the precise rhythm and recites the Sanskrit mantra in that original creative rhythm, then there will be what Sri Aurobindo is able to achieve with English. But the Sanskrit by itself isn't going to achieve that. What?
Second best one.
So I'm going to read the mantra, now that you know what it means. And it's short. Our ride is, yeah, but the ride was going to come early.
12.
Yeah, so that's fine. They know that we're probably coming at 12:30.
Okay.
You can read the Sanskrit along if you like. I take the reading of this as a sacrificial offering, and the invocation is for Brihaspati to reveal this creative power of speech. He who established in his might the extremities of the earth. Brihaspati, in the triple world of our fulfillment, by his cry, on him the pristine sages meditated, and illumined, set him in their front with his tongue of ecstasy. They, O Brihaspati, vibrating with the impulse of their movement, rejoicing in perfected consciousness, wove for us abundant, rapid, invincible, wide, the world from which this being was born. That do thou protect, O Brihaspati. O Brihaspati, that which is the highest supreme of existence, thither from this world they attain and take their seat, who touch the truth. For thee are dug the wells of honey which drain this hill, and their sweetnesses stream out on every side and break into overflowing. Brihaspati, first in his birth, from the vast light, in the highest heavenly space, with his seven fronts, with his seven rays, with his many births, drives utterly away the darknesses that encompass us with his cry. He, with his cohort of the rhythms that affirm, of the chant that illumines, has broken Vala into pieces with his cry. Brihaspati drives upward the bright ones who speed our offerings. He shouts aloud as he leads them, lowing they reply. Thus to the Father, the universal Godhead, the bull of the herds, may we dispose our sacrifices and submission and oblations. O Brihaspati, full of energy and rich in offspring, may we become masters of the felicities. Verily is he king and conquers by his energy. By his heroic force, all that is in the worlds that confront him, who bears Brihaspati in him well contained, and has the exultant dance, and adores and gives him the first fruits of his enjoyment. Yea, he dwells firmly seated in his proper home, and for him Ila at all times grows in richness. To him all creatures of themselves submit. The king, he in whom the sole power goes in front. None can assail him. He conquers utterly all the riches of the worlds which confront him and the world in which he dwells. He who, for the soul power that seeks its manifestation, creates in himself that highest good is cherished by the gods. Thou, Brihaspati and Indra, drink the Soma wine, rejoicing in this sacrifice, lavishing substance. Let the powers of its delight enter into you and take perfect form, control in us a felicity full of every energy. O Brihaspati, O Indra, increase in us together, and may that your perfection of mind be created in us. Foster the thoughts, bring out the mind's multiple powers, destroy all poverties that they bring who seek to conquer the Aryan.
Reflection on the Vedic intonation in the chanting, where it's always on three notes basically, like we're here, we're reaching up and we're reaching into the below, this dance between the worlds basically, between the heavens and the subconscious and us in the middle, and possibly with this kind of, how to say, also in the recitation in English, it's just clear, we're just here. and here's happening. Here, the possibility of fulfillment.
But we can read in different terms.
Yeah.
But that's another matter. Altogether, it's another topic. On chandas, which we can look into.
Yeah. Not only chandas, but also the intonation, because in that way, that invitation of Rod was not a bad one, that he said, would you read it along? Because that's interesting, because then you also go through the meaning level of the word. Not just then there's rhythm there, and then there's the intonation there.
Maybe next time, go along with the topic, you start by that reading,
you do an invocation for the beginning experience. Because see, this is what we were talking about, since finally we have a little demonstration that when you teach a class, it's one thing to tell the kids and then show, and they use the demonstration, and it gives them a little idea, it gives the experience, a direct experience. So we could try that next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh.